This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is your host this week on the People Speak Radio. My name is Rock Cash. People Speak Radio invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 805-399-1000, access code 769-6608. Press pound when prompted. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can go to bbsradio.com and navigate to station 2 and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free, USA and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. This evening, our guest is a world-renowned peace activist. Cindy Sheehan is internationally renowned for peace work, her activism. Her oldest son was killed in Iraq, so she decided to set up camp in front of George Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas. Cindy is now running for governor of the state of California under the Freedom and Peace Party. Cindy, good evening. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's actually the Peace and Freedom Party. You just twisted the peace and freedom
right
around. But so, yeah, so it's the Peace and Freedom Party. And yes, I am running for governor.
Cindy, what prompted you to run for governor? I know you've been fighting against this war that's been going on for years, but what prompted you to take political office?
Well, I'm campaigning for political office, but this isn't the first time I've had a campaign. I ran for Congress in 2008 in San Francisco against Nancy Pelosi. And last year I ran for vice president. Roseanne Barr was the presidential candidate for the Peace and Freedom Party. And I think that one of the problems with our country is the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think that we have to challenge the so-called two-party system every chance that we get in, electorally with activism or however way that we want, that works well for us to challenge the scam or fraud of the so-called two-party system.
The criminals, you mean?
Yeah.
That's basically it. What kind of resistance did you get? I want to go back to the time when you set up in front of the Crawford Ranch. What legal flack did you get from the government agencies?
For camping in Crawford?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first summer we didn't have any legal problems. And then when we left, the county passed what they called the Cindy Sheehan ordinances, where you couldn't camp in a ditch or eat or sleep by the side of the road in the county. And so we countered by buying property in Crawford. I used my own money to buy property so we could have Camp Casey's there. And every time we went, whenever George Bush was on vacation, we had a Camp Casey there in Crawford, we would challenge those laws and get arrested doing the things that they said we weren't supposed to be doing. And then not too long ago, those laws were declared unconstitutional by a higher court in Texas.
Oh, that's great, because I was about to say the same thing. They're making laws as they go along to benefit themselves.
Right. So that was quite a victory, but now we're not going there to camp anymore. So, but it was nice to put a win on our side for once.
Oh, absolutely. It seems like the courts are, sometimes they're for us, but then shortly thereafter, somebody comes up and says, oh, no, that's not the way it goes, like this recent thing with the NSA. What are your plans and aspirations as governor of the state of California if you do get elected?
Well, I think that we need to, the Peace and Freedom Party is a socialist, feminist, and environmentalist party. So we have quite an ambitious agenda and platform. It's about, cleaning the environment, using sustainable, renewable forms of energy, stopping fracking, stopping the huge water grabs by big oil and big agri. It's about education. When I grew up in California, I was born in Inglewood, and I grew up in Bellflower. Now I live up in Northern California. But when I was growing up, education was free. University, college, community college, very good education, everything. There was no such thing as paying for music or art or buses or anything like that. So Jerry Brown and the a political establishment in California, we spend millions of dollars to the private prisons every year. Jerry Brown refuses to release prisoners to alleviate crowding, but hires more beds from private prisons. So what we want to do is to reform that part of California, to use the resources in education, healthcare, social safety nets, and to start to equalize income and access to the wealth and resources of California. We believe that 100% of the people should own 100% of the wealth and resources, not 1% or even like 0.01% owning a majority of the resources. So it's an ambitious agenda, but we think with we have a governor in Sacramento that struggles with the people and not against the people, we think that it could be definitely be achieved. And in California, we have an open primary now. So in June, I just need to come in second place to go to the general election in November. And I think that if that happens, then we have a very good chance of telling the people of California that this is the way it is. It's the state has recovered if you're in the 1%, but if you're the rest of us, we still have high unemployment. Our poverty rate that has increased, 30% more people are below the federal poverty line, and that's 2.1 million children. And so we need to work together to reverse those trends.
But I'm sure you know that mainstream media is not going to give you the attention that you need. They're going to block you out of the media. What are your plans to go around that?
Well, we have a situation where there's going to be at least three Republicans running. So we think that vote will be divided, and that we could, I came in second when I ran against Nancy Pelosi as an independent, that we could actually come in second place with a very low percentage of the vote total for the primary. And, we have a lot of people out there right now collecting signatures for my campaign. We need 10,000 signatures to get on the ballot. And every signature we get, we reduce our money that we have to pay. So it's either 10,000 signatures or $3,500. Of course, we want to collect 10,000 signatures. We have people out there spreading the word, and we just have to talk to as many people as we can. And if I come in second in June, which is not out of the realm of possibility, then I don't think the corporate media can ignore us.
I see. Well, that would be a good thing. I also want to ask you, because I'm a resident of California, Southern California, and not too far away from where you grew up. As a matter of fact, I've been in Bellflower many times. But I'm also a hunter, and I also, you know, enjoy the wilderness, and I enjoy, you know, owning weapons and stuff like that. What are your stands on gun control?
Well, that we are for the Second Amendment and the Peace and Freedom Party, but not against reasonable background checks and waiting periods and things like that either. So I'm a vegan. I don't hunt and I don't eat animals. So, you know, that's a personal choice that I've made. But, you know, we do support the Second Amendment right for people to, you know, have weapons, mostly in defense of against the government. But, you know, rarely are they ever used for that. And with the government having nukes and Hellfire missiles, it's kind of silly to think that we're going to defend ourselves against that.
Well, that's it is kind of silly. But once again, you can only enslave an unarmed society. You can't enslave a society that's going to be able to fight you back in one way or another. Even with the Hellfire missiles, they still need the personnel behind them. And I don't think our military is going to fire upon us.
I
believe the private contractors might, like Halliburton and Blackwaters and those guys. But I don't think our troops are going to fire back. I think they're going to stand with the people.
Well, that's something that we could definitely hope for.
Yes, of course.
But that's something that, you know, our troops have fired on our U.S. citizens. So, you know, it's just something that we have to, you know, be recognized and be certainly wary of. That's for sure.
Well, I think that we need to invest more education into our military personnel, letting them know that as they're going in, that their number one obligation is to the people. It's not to the government. You know, it is to the people of the United States, because we are the ultimate employers. We're paying the taxes for them to go. So this is what they need to realize.
Well, I totally agree. And I think our politicians are our employees. You know, the courts are our employees. But when's the last time that it's worked for us? You know, it's the people who line their pockets. It's the war machine. It's, you know, the prison industrial complex. It's all of those that really are pulling the strings.
Yeah, well, I've noticed that also the legal system here in Los Angeles, Orange County, they're starting to sell out civil offenses like traffic tickets or fines and stuff like that. They're selling them off to collection companies.
Right.
They're selling this off to corporations. I find that highly unconstitutional.
Everything's being privatized for sure, and that's not the way that it should be.
No, it shouldn't be that way at all. So what are your plans if you do make it into office? What is your first course of action?
Well, we have to, you know, evaluate the state of the state, and we have to increase the social safety nets. We have to make education a priority and the environment a priority, stopping the fracking that Jerry Brown is so fond of, putting our farmlands back in the hands of farmers and out of the hands of Monsanto and big agribusinesses, but working with the people to achieve these things. You know, a governor can't do these things by his or herself. So, you know, hopefully if I do get put into office, it will be because we have a movement of people willing to work with us in Sacramento to make it a state for everybody, not just the 1%.
We need to turn a whole country like that.
Well, yeah, we can do it one state at a time, though.
Yes.
California is very powerful. It's a very big state with a lot of wealth and resources and a lot of, you know, potential. And if California can do it, it would put a big dent in the empire and hopefully inspire similar movements across the country.
A personal question for you. Would you, being a governor and say you do get that position, would you advise your attorney general to press charges against these political leaders that are doing things wrong against our civil rights and against the Constitution?
That's actually not a personal question. That's more of a policy question. But yes, I am, you know, 100% for accountability for the politicians and the CEOs of corporations that have poisoned our environment, stolen money and resources out of our pockets, and killed people all over the world. You know, California will be, we like to say that we'll change the bear flag republic to the peace flag republic.
I'm so.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
All right, we're back after that short break with the BBS Radio Network. My guest, Cindy Sheehan. Welcome back, Cindy. I think, Cindy, that we do need to get a firm grip on the politicians. But not only in this country, it seems like it's a worldwide problem.
Well, of course, yes. So many of the politicians are neoliberal scoundrels that are working with profiteers in the war industries and in the security industries. So no, it's not just the United States, but we're the leading empire in this world, and you know, we're the ones here in this country that need to try and change that.
Absolutely. And who will your running mate be for governor?
We don't do that in California.
Okay.
It's a separate office. It has a separate campaign, but we don't have anybody from the Peace and Freedom Party running for lieutenant governor, unfortunately. We're a small party and we're focusing on two statewide elections, myself and one of our members, Natalie Harizi, H-R-I-Z-I, is running for insurance commissioner. So we're hoping that we can concentrate on those two campaigns to, you know, make a difference. Even if we don't win, hopefully we can affect the discourse. And we've heard my campaign slogan is "Epic End Poverty in California." We've heard Jerry Brown, his staff saying similar things. So perhaps we're already affecting the discourse. I'm not sure with his new budget that we've affected any policy, but I think we're making them notice so far.
Oh, well, I've got a very interesting question from one of our listeners, Sean in Pennsylvania. He wants to know, Cindy, how can you get elected when companies like Diebold count the private votes? You know, they count everything that's in private. Do you have any way of overseeing that, making sure that you're getting the correct electronic vote? Or
no, actually, it's a big problem. Of course, it's a big problem all over with the not only just the voting machines, but the way they manipulate elections. It's, we have, you know, we the people have very little chance of winning these electoral races until there's some kind of election reform. It's like a catch-22. There won't be any election reform until we the people, you know, get in office to do that. But then how can we get in if there's not election reform? And there's also the question of this big money in politics. Jerry Brown's already raised about $12, $13 million for a reelection campaign. And it shouldn't be about money. It should be about the person who is more qualified to make change. And so we have, you know, a horrible electoral system here in the United States, but how can we even educate people if we don't run for office, if we just give it up to those scoundrels in the Democratic and Republican Party?
Well, I noticed that to be the biggest problem of all is when you come across most people, they're either Democrat or Republican. They don't want to hear any of the other side, or they say, well, none of the other, you know, ones will ever win and stuff like that. So we'll go with this or we'll go with that. They don't understand that it takes every single individual to make the change.
Right. So we're fighting attitudes. We're fighting conditioning. We're fighting, you know, people's false perceptions about our so-called democracy. And like I said, how can we change things if we don't fight it?
True. Okay, got another question for you from another listener. Liz in California says she supported you during the Bush years. Do you feel that things have improved in the United States with the election of Obama?
Of course not. I don't feel like that.
All right. Well,
because they haven't. It's just the continuation of the policies of the Bush regime. Well, it's actually the policies of the ruling class continue no matter who's president.
Right. This is what I see personally is that this is a repeat of Germany when the Zionists sold the Germans out to, you know, to get their own gain in the state. And they sold the Germans out by bringing in the war when Hitler was actually trying to make peace during World War One, not World War Two. World War Two was a completely different episode. But, you know, we see the same thing happening over and over again before, you know, these tyrannists take over and the countries get taken over. They first put the people into fear, then they starve them, then they disarm them, and then they take over. And it seems like three of these steps have been, well, two of the steps, 9/11 with the fear factor and the ongoing fear in the media. And of course, we're being starved right now. People are, you know, hurting very badly. So what do we do? How do we get to the point to where we need to get if the elections are corrupted and everything else? What is your idea on that?
Well, it has to be a movement. It can't just be elections. We just can't say, you know, there's election in June or there's election in November, and when that's over, our movement's over. I'm not a member of Jerry Brown's class. I'm not a member of Barack Obama's class, or you know, the CEO of Monsanto or, you know, big agribusinesses. I am a member of the working class, and I go around the state. I have friends and family and connections, and I have fellow political activists, fellow peace activists, and everybody is struggling. People are starting to realize that we're being screwed, and how can we change that if we don't work together to organize to, like I said earlier.
Got questions? The library's got answers. and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back. This is Rock Cash with my guest, Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, let's go back to where we left off. I have another question for you from a young lady in PA. Cindy, she wants to know what your analysis of the threat of radiation from Fukushima on the coast of California.
I am very concerned about that, and I have my own podcast called Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and I've done many shows about Fukushima. Over to Japan, I went over there a few months after the earthquake and tsunami, and I'm very concerned about what's happening there. I don't see my state government testing the food, the water, the air. And so I think that there's, it's a terrible threat to us here on the West Coast and actually here in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, I believe they're releasing megatons of radioactive waste into the water there. Tammy in Wisconsin wants to know, if you're elected governor, what would you do to solve the economic problems in California?
Well, we have to. California has a high unemployment rate, and a lot of our wealth is being siphoned off by private prisons, by big oil, by the 1%. So we need to raise the minimum wage as a first step. We need to have price controls so we can stabilize and equalize the income. We need jobs programs. We need an education system that is free and accessible to every Californian, not just the people of, the children of the 1%, like it was before. I have a comprehensive economic recovery plan that's at my website, cindy2014.org, and get the people involved in their, in their communities and in the state. to, you know, make this, the state has a lot of resources and a lot of wealth, but it's being sucked up by just a small percentage of the people.
It's being stolen.
Right, exactly. Basically.
Yeah, it's being stolen. There's no question about it, whether it's the resources or the land that is being sold off as eminent domain for loans by Hillary Clinton or Obama.
Well, we need a state bank, for one thing. We need to get out of the Federal Reserve. We advocate for a state banking system. And we also have over a million homeless people here in California. But we have like 5 empty housing units for each homeless person. To me, to have one person that doesn't want to, families, children, being sleeping without a roof over their heads is unconscionable. There's no excuse for it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Phil in Kentucky wants to know if you would be willing to seek endorsement from Larry Flint to help in fundraising for your campaign.
I actually had support from Larry when I ran against Nancy Pelosi, but I haven't heard from him in this campaign yet. We could certainly try and reach out to him.
Absolutely. Also, Frank in Ohio wants to know if you're willing to put the 9/11 truth to the end of the Fed policies in your platform for office.
I'm sorry, to put 9/11 truth what?
He wants to know if you're willing to put 9/11 truth or end the Fed policies into your platform. For office.
Well, I just said that we needed a state bank to get off the Federal Reserve, and that would go a long way to solving our debt issues in California. A lot of our money goes to paying off old debt and the interest actually on the old debt. And that it's not just a, you know, it's not just a personal problem or a family problem, it's a community problem. And it's a state problem. So definitely we need a state bank in California to, you know, reduce the power that the Federal Reserve has over our economy. And I am an advocate for 9/11 truth. I don't know how it would fit into a state platform, but I've never backed away from questioning the official story of 9/11 and calling for a new transparent investigation.
Oh, absolutely. To me, 9/11 was nothing made sense. And if it doesn't make sense to me, there's no credibility there. No credibility at all. We have one more question from a listener, but this is more of a personal question. He wants to know whom you are supporting the 49ers in the upcoming game against Seattle Seahawks.
I'm not a football fan.
Yeah.
That's all I want to say. But, of course, I want to root for the California team.
Great.
But if I am a fan of any sports teams, I was born and raised in Southern California, so we in Los Angeles, we lost our football team a long time ago, but I will boldly come out and say that I am a Dodger fan.
Oh, great. You're a baseball fan. That's awesome. It's been 10 years. It's been 10 years since your son was killed in Iraq. And I know it's a very, very devastating situation as a mother losing a child. And I know that there is really no difference from the first day and today. How are you dealing with that? How are you overcoming the thoughts and the just how are you handling missing your son?
Well, you know, it's just a day-to-day kind of thing. Some days I miss him a lot more. I have 4 grandchildren now, and they've brought a lot of joy back to my life and more motivation and purpose for my activism, because I'd like to pass on a world to them that is environmentally sustainable, that's peaceful, and that has more income equality than it has now. And so,
and one that's free of corruption.
Well, as free as possible. But people told me when Casey died that time would heal it, but it doesn't really. You just learn how to live with it. You just learn how to carry on your normal life. Like I would imagine if you had a leg or arm amputated, it wouldn't be the same, but you would learn how to function. And that's basically what grieving parents have to do. We're still alive, so we have to learn how to best function in the world without, our child or one of our children. And so that's basically how we do it. And I try to honor memory every day by making this world a better place.
Okay. That's the best possible thing that you can do is to try to do things in their memory, and it helps to make you stronger to get things done. Good for you. Betty in California wants to know, she says, Cindy, tell us what is going on with your present situation in resisting payment of taxes as you feel it supports the war effort?
I am a war tax resister. I haven't paid income taxes since my son was killed. And a couple years ago, I think it was in 2012, the time just seems to be zooming by. I got subpoenaed by the IRS, and I had to go before a federal judge in Sacramento at the 9th District Court. And the IRS wanted to force me to comply with their orders, and the judge, the magistrate, refused to compel me to comply with them. He said that what I was doing seemed to be a very civilized response to something that happened that was so uncivilized. So since then, the IRS has vacated their subpoena, and I'm still not paying my taxes, and I refuse to until, you know, the empire is overthrown and we stop spending so much money on war and the national security state and the police state. And when my taxes go for things that support the community and support the health of the community, I'm not against paying taxes. And as a matter of fact, I'm not against giving back to my community and my society and my world. I think that my entire life is an offering, you know, to try and make the world a better place. But what I'm against is what they go for. And so, you know, if our struggle becomes victorious, then I'd be happy to support good, positive, healthy things.
Well, when the original tax code was put in place, it was – I hear the feedback, sorry. When the original tax code was in place, it wasn't meant for the average person to pay taxes. It was meant for the wealthy to pay the taxes because they were the ones making all the profit. You know, you traded in your labor for salaries, so you're really not making any profit there. And that's still in the tax codes, but people don't know this because the situation and the problem is that people are so complacent and they're willing to go along and they're so compliant and they just don't have any way of resisting, or they fear the threat of either incarceration or they fear the threat of government or anything being on their record. So they just comply with whatever these people tell them that they need to do, even though people that are working for salary don't need to be paying income tax because they're not making any profit.
Well, that's one thing that we advocate for, is for control of the workplace. And, you know, if what we have to do is we have to suffer the consequences of a bad economy, but we don't get to participate in the, you know, when it's prosperous either. We're always having to struggle. And when California had great education, what I was just talking about, corporations were paying 35%. And now they pay, if they pay anything, just like about 9%. And so that is another situation that has to be reversed. We believe in a progressive income tax. The more you make, the more you pay. The less you make, the less you pay. And you there's a certain line where you won't have to pay any income taxes in our tax program of the Peace and Freedom Party.
Well, it seems like these corporations and the ruling class is just pushing us into an enslaved situation, to where we are doing nothing but working for less.
Right. That's what I was talking about. There's a sense all over the state and all over the country, because I just rode my bike from California to Washington, D.C. Last April to July. And there's a sense all over the country of this, of that we are, people are tired of being codependent with the ruling class in their profit, and in our loss and our struggle. And life shouldn't be a struggle from the time you're born into the time you die. You shouldn't have to work until you die. You know, there should be a human right where we're entitled to retire at a reasonable age. If we choose to work, some people love to work and they're going to choose to work, but they should, you know, we shouldn't see gray haired, sick people stooped over working at Walmart, McDonald's. That's another unconscionable, immoral thing that happens in our society. We need to have a society that cares about people and not about war and profit.
Well, the retirement age, from what I remember in the late 60s, was 52 or 55, and then it just started going up and up and up and up and up. And it seems like they're robbing us, basically. It's a Ponzi scheme that just will never replenish itself, but it gives them something to keep stealing from.
Well, even if the retirement age is 67, very few people can afford to live off of Social Security. And of course, they want to take more and more of that away from us and charge us more for things like Medicare. So, yeah, it's just terrible. So even if the retirement age is 67, where you get Social Security, very few people at that point can afford to stop working. And, you know, most countries, it's at 60 or 62, which seems like nowadays a pretty reasonable age to be able to retire and enjoy some of your life.
True. What do you think of the Federal Reserve and them charging us interest on our own tax dollars?
Well, I am opposed to that system, of course. And so not only do they, do things like that, but they use our tax money to bail out banks and Wall Street. And we get our homes taken away from us. We get our cars taken away from us. We get our jobs and our retirement taken away from us. But the, the banking cartels are not, like I said, not suffering any consequences for things that they did, for crimes that they have actually fostered and committed. So
I don't see it as a bailout. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it as a bailout. I see it as a stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. You know, it's the reverse.
Poor, giving to the rich.
I'm sorry. Stealing from the poor. And it's a reverse Robin Hood. They're stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. The banks are not being bailed out. They didn't lose nothing in the first place.
So, well, they could have. I mean, many of the, many of the investment bankers were forced out of business, but some of them got bailed out and some of them were forced out of business. So it was just this big, ruling class bloodbath on Wall Street where the rich got richer and the poor got poorer.
I view it more as a monopoly takeover.
Well, yeah, that's basically what happened. It's a consolidation of the wealth, but yep. Nobody in that class suffered, but everybody in our class suffered.
Exactly. Would you have higher aspirations if you do make it finally to governor, and would you go into maybe federal public office, or would you just only want to concentrate on California?
Well, I think that I have run twice for federal elective office, electoral politics. I just wrote a book called I Left My Marbles in San Francisco, The Scandal of Federal Electoral Politics. And I do think that our political organizing should be more local. You know, as bad as our elections are here in California and locally, federally, if you're not a handpicked member of the elite, the political elite, if you haven't been groomed from day one to be presented to the American people as one of the candidates, then there's very, very little chance unless we have a revolution. And that's what we're trying to create, is these nonviolent people's revolutions. Like I said, if we're successful in California, even if I don't win, if we're successful in creating a movement, then it definitely can spread horizontally. And then the only way it can go would be vertically to the top. So I never want to say never, because after I ran against Pelosi, I said I would never run for office again. And this is my second time since then.
I wish you would have beaten Pelosi.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that is one evil woman.
Definitely. It's the system that's evil, and she's part of it. She's entrenched in it, just like Jerry Brown.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Can you maybe explain to our guests, our listeners, that it would be okay to revolt, but it doesn't have to be a revolution in a violent manner. It can be a peaceful revolution. You can do what Cindy did and stop paying your income tax. This is the only way you can shut it down, is by non-compliance. And that would be a peaceful revolution. There doesn't have to be a bloodbath to get our point across.
I think that we have to be courageous. I think that we have to be committed to true change. And I think that we have numbers and we have what's right on our side. And we just have to realize that 99% can certainly stand up to the 1% and be victorious. But we have to put aside petty differences and work together to make this happen. And I was only supposed to be on till 6:50, so I'm going to have to go. But can I give my website?
Oh, absolutely. Give your website. And, I wasn't aware that you were only supposed to be on till 6:50.
I was told 6 to 6:50, so I have to go for something else. But my website is cindy2014.org. For CINDY2014.org for the campaign. And then I have a podcast, and my activist website is CindySheehanSoapbox.com.
Great. And people, don't forget to help out and donate to Cindy's campaign. We need people like Cindy in office. And Cindy, thank you very much. This is Rakesh, your host here on the People Thank Speak. Thanks to Don Newsom, sound engineer. And we'll see you guys next week. We don't know exactly who our guest is for next week, but it will be interesting, and it will not be mainstream, and it will be honest and open. Have a good night, everybody. See you all next week.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.